We're going to start now. Good evening, and thank you all for coming to our program. I'm not running for president. I'll also not tell you who to vote for. But I am endorsing tonight's program. The panel discussion's topic is the year or two in Israel and its effect on dating and marriage among our adolescents. And we're very privileged to have two extremely talented and knowledgeable Jewish educators with us tonight to address this important issue. Tonight's program is sponsored by End the Madness, which is an organization for which I've been privileged to volunteer for the last 5 years. It's a unique effort to address some of the hardship of dating within the observant Jewish community. And the organization was founded by a young man named Hananya Weissman, who now lives in Israel, and its mission is to create more opportunities for Orthodox singles to meet in natural and less pressurized settings, and to change some of the prevailing attitudes and culture surrounding dating and marriage within the Orthodox community. You can visit our website, www.endthemadness.org. I'm also circulating a sign-up sheet, which I think some of you have signed, so that you can be added to our mailing list and receive information about upcoming events and some of the things that we're doing. First, a few words of Hakarat HaTov to Ma'ayanot and the administrators there for allowing us to have the program here at the school, and to our panelists, Rabbi Eliezer Rubin and to Mrs. Rookie Billet. Thank you for agreeing to share your wisdom and to volunteer your time to speak on this important issue. The format for the panel tonight is as follows. Each panelist will speak for about 20 minutes. Rabbi Rubin will focus on the guy's side, and Mrs. Billet will focus on the woman's side. This will be followed by a Q&A where members of the audience, that's you, can ask our panelists any questions. So I think it'll be very valuable, the Q&A. After the program's over, you're welcome to stay for some desserts and coffee in the lobby. Without any further ado, let me introduce our two panelists. Mrs. Rookie Billet is no stranger to most of you, at least in the Teaneck area. She's the principal of the Ma'ayanot Yeshiva High School for Girls, former assistant principal of the Stella K. Abraham High School for Girls and Yeshiva University Central High School for Girls in Queens. She's been a leading teacher and an administrator in Yeshiva High School education and adult education for several decades. And in her spare time, she serves as the Rebbetzin of the Young Israel of Woodmere, which is the largest Young Israel in the country. She speaks widely on topics of interest to Jewish women and families, as well as on Jewish education subjects. Rebbetzin Billet actually might just be the busiest Jewish professional working in the field today. She's actually turned me down on several occasions for programs where I wanted her to speak. And what Mrs. Billet doesn't know is that while she may be one of the most busy people around, I'm one of the most persistent. And I finally convinced her to say yes to a speaking engagement for End the Madness, and I appreciate that. I'm also going to embarrass Rookie a little bit because I think it's important for everybody to know this. You know, many educators do a fine job teaching their students, and then once the kids leave the school, you know, they often sever ties with the students. I've heard from many parents about how Rebbetzin Billet continues to maintain relationships with her students when they go to Israel after high school, and even when they return home for college. And I think we're going to touch on some of those subjects tonight. And I think it's an enormously important activity in which she's engaging. And I think other educators can learn an incredible lesson from her. The Ma'ayanot community is extremely lucky to have her to lead their school, and Rookie, thank you very much for participating in tonight's event. Rabbi Eliezer Rubin is the Klatt Family Rosh HaYeshiva and High School Principal at the Ray Kushner Yeshiva High School in Livingston, New Jersey. Before that, he served as an administrator at both the Ramaz Middle School and Upper School. He received his smicha from the Israeli Rabbanut, and he's been active in Jewish education as a teacher and an administrator for his entire career. Two interesting facts that you may not know about Rabbi Rubin. First, his son is a star basketball player at Ramaz, and I know this because he's a teammate of my nephew. And it does beg the question, Rabbi Rubin, Which school would you root for if Kushner played Ramaz in the NYHSL finals?
No endorsements tonight.
No endorsements. Okay, well, have to find that out if it ever happens. Second, if you ever needed a second job, you certainly could easily do stand-up comedy. I've heard Rabbi Rubin serve as an MC for various events, as an auctioneer, and I think he's very entertaining. And although tonight's subject is a serious one, I think he'll bring a special, unique style, which I think you'll all enjoy. So without further ado, I'd like to start with Revitson Billet and enjoy the program.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael, for your very warm introduction. Sorry. The truth is that I felt more capable of some of the other things that Michael asked me to speak about than I do about this one, but I have tried to do my due diligence and do some homework discussing the issue with some parents of students who've come home from Israel and with some students who have come home from Israel and been, as we say, in the parasha. So I'd like to just delve right into the subject by giving you some of my observations. One thing for sure is that students differ in what they go into the Israel experience expecting. So there is no uniform answer as to what will my daughter experience, how will she come out. It depends how she goes in, it depends who she is all the years that you've been raising her, it depends what she wants when she goes, and it depends a little bit on where she goes to. Although I won't say that it totally depends on that. Some students want to change, and they go in there saying, I want to flip, I want to go move to the right. Some students say, I want to stay exactly the way I am, and I'm going to resist every effort that is being made to brainwash me. And some students, of course, don't know what they want, and they'll just let nature take its course. And of course, schools also differ in terms of the religious impact that they wish to have on their students. I think that one can somewhat predict the impact that a particular seminary desires to have on many of its students. And we might be able to say, and of course this is being recorded, I won't mention any names of any institutions, but we might be able to say, if you want to go to the right, go there. If you want to stay how you are, go there. And if you want to just coast, go there. Those are possibilities. We also have differences between the students. Some girls have already begun to think about dating and marriage before they leave high school. Some girls have only begun to think about dating and not marriage. Some girls talk a lot more to their parents during their high school years than other girls, and therefore their parents have a stronger influence on them. What I have observed also, and which almost all parents confirm to me, is that girls talk much more to their parents while they are in Israel than boys do, which also, I believe, lessens the impact of the year in Israel on girls as opposed to boys. So mothers of girls or parents of girls, you can relax a little bit more than the parents of boys. I'm also told that the boys' rebbeim tend to talk a lot more about marriage and lifestyle to the boys than the girls' rebbeim and teachers do about to the girls. So there seems to be a desire in the boys' schools to address these issues, and maybe there is even a desire on the part of the boys to hear more about these things, and the girls may be a bit more settled in their views. They may know a little bit more about what they want. They may know who they are a little bit more. What I'm also told is that boys yeshivot have more extended hours of instructional and Beit Medrash time than the girls' schools do, and that also impacts. Also, girls develop more of what's called shidduch anxiety. They feel that if they don't become engaged during their college years, their chances of meeting somebody suitable decline. And I believe that they seem to be right about that. All the girls tell me it's much better to date and get engaged when you are in college, because that's a time when there is a venue, when there is a core group of friends who will set you up. Once you're out in the working world or out in an out-of-town graduate school or something, the chances are diminished. I know that I remember saying to my mother when I was 21, Ma, if you knew that I would be engaged by the time I'm 26, would you be pressuring me now? And she said, if I knew that you would be engaged by the time you were 26, no, I wouldn't say a word. But since I don't know that, get on with it. Ideas for parents during the high school years. in terms of establishing a certain value system for your girls. I have believed very strongly throughout my career that any values that you want to set have to begin when your children begin to speak. Many times parents say to us, teachers, you know, administrators, you have more of an impact than the parents. And I say, no. When we come into their lives as total strangers, when they're 14 and 15, they are already in teenage resistance mode. Whatever you want to instill in them, you have to start talking about by the time they're 2, 3, 4, etc. Then the rules that you've established or the values that you want to guide their lives, you know, are resident in their Weltanschauung, and I think that's really important. The boundaries that you establish in the early years, the openness, the closeness, the fact that you are someone they can turn to with any questions and that you will not be judgmental about the questions that they ask, even though you may have opinions about what they ought to do or what they should do, that's okay. I am a very strong believer in the instilling of the values of Kiddushim to you, you know, holiness in all of one's relationships, and Kavod HaBriyot, respect for all people in all relationships from the time the kids talk. And when you instill those relationships, that I think has a positive impact on what we do in the dating years. I am a believer also in encouraging activities such as NCSY or B'nai Akiva. I think activities like this have positive role models for healthy socialization. They have good advisors who've been through a lot. They have adult supervision for co-ed activities. I know that people have sometimes set such strong boundaries against co-ed activities for their kids that their kids sneak around. I think the worst thing is when your kids sneak around. When you say, invite your boy and girlfriends to our house, and you put in a ping pong table in your basement or whatever it is, in your home, and you establish these established patterns for healthy socialization. I don't believe that going to an all-girls school or going to an all-boys school has a huge impact. You know, clearly kids who go to co-ed schools have a certain degree of comfort around the members of the opposite sex. I myself have went to only all-girls schools, and so did my children, but all my kids and I all went to co-ed camps, and we, I think, developed a healthy attitude towards boy and girl relationships because of the way my parents raised us, because of the way we tried to raise our kids, and because of the values that we tried to establish with other parents. And I believe that that's also a very important thing, to network with other parents, that these are the things we all believe in. It's always a danger when a kid says to a parent, you're the only one who doesn't let us. You should have proof that you're not the only one. You should have a network of other parents that agree with you in a lot of things. I'm a strong believer in encouraging chesed activities like yachad or friendship circle that involve both boys and girls doing projects together. I remember a friend of mine who was the vice principal of one of the co-ed schools. He said, co-ed classes, those are great. They hear boys and girls as thinkers, as scholars, as people of ideas. Now, co-ed lunch, that's the problem. That was his view. And as a co-ed camp division head for many years, I know that when I had the girls and boys do things like prepare an activity for the elderly in Camp Block or prepare a song or a skit about a theme, those things work. When we just threw them into the canteen, it wasn't that good. So encourage activities that are goal-centered, like the teen minyan, attending a shiur afterwards, saying Divrei Torah, that sort of thing. Trying to talk fast and just try to make some, you know, important points. Should parents be researching the Israeli schools? I believe, yes, definitely go to your Israel nights and ask all the questions. Feel free to ask, do you preach about marriage and dating? Do you preach a kol el lifestyle? Do you preach ideas that seem might be the antithesis of the ideas that I believe in terms of my values for my kids? But I just want to tell you that all the research you do may not help, because we're at the stage when 8th grade kids are telling their parents exactly where they want to go to high school. So, of course, your 12th graders are going to tell you exactly where they want to go to Israel. And very often you're going to be in the position of just writing the check and okaying it. So your research will help, but especially if you have an open discussion kind of relationship with your child in which you can pursue and peruse all of the aspects of the school. I had some extensive conversations, as I said, preparing for this forum, and I would like to say that one parent said that she felt that children should be discouraged from dating until at least a year after they return from Israel. The reason she said that was because in her experience, it takes a year or more for the student to figure out exactly who she really is after she comes back from Israel. She comes back from Israel often wanting a kollel lifestyle, and if she dates and she becomes engaged just then, she may have made the biggest decision of her life before she has discovered who she really is and what she is really all about and what ideas that she acquired in Israel have staying power and before she has really adjusted back to real life. I don't know that we can control that, but that's an idea that one parent of a girl really felt strongly about. How involved should parents be? This mother felt very involved with helping her child sort out who she is, less involved in the whole checkout process. And that's also a lifestyle issue. I know parents on both sides, parents who go with the checklist, parents who have the list of who the next 5 dates are going to be for their son or their daughter, mostly their sons, because their sons get 35 calls for every call that their daughter gets. But that's, you know, part of the issue. Everyone that I questioned seemed to agree that Rebbeim, teachers, and Madrichot in Israel have a 24/7 kind of presence, which high school teachers do not have. When this 24/7 kind of presence takes place in the complete absence of parental presence, it becomes even more powerful. I was told by a parent that there are Musar lectures every Thursday night. No outsiders are permitted. Kids fall under the spell. They are pulled in. A student said that she felt that it was very important for students to remember that their parents really know them very well. She said that in her seminary, what was emphasized by a lot of the Madrichot and the teachers was that the kids are on a completely different page from their parents, and therefore they don't have to listen to their parents as much when it comes to these choices. And this student, you know, who was a 23-year-old single, said that it was much more important for students to really remember that their parents know them a lot better. She told me some stories about some friends who married the year after Israel, who immediately put on a sheitel and went into a kollel lifestyle, and then were very uncomfortable that their madrichot and their rebbeim had told them that money doesn't matter. But they had grown up in a situation where money did matter, where they were used to buying new Uggs, you know, for $250 every year and so on. And that didn't quite fit in with their lifestyle. And that it was important for the kids to listen to their parents. I don't know that we can tell them that, but, you know, we meaning parents or teachers, but that it was an idea. Parents also spoke more about the potential involvement of parents in Israel. Parents told me that the entire year went by and they did not speak to one person in the school. There was no such forum as a PTA meeting or a conference, etc. And they felt very strongly that I should encourage parents to visit Israel, to talk with the rebbeim and the teachers who are most popular or most influential on your students. Hear what they have to say. Let them hear what you have to say and become a little bit more involved. You know, she said twice a year there should be conferences. She also felt that although the Israel nights and the listening to the spokespersons from the schools was really important, the best research would be by looking at and talking to the kids who come back from the various programs, because they can tell you exactly what the program was like the year before and so on. My time is almost up, and I hope that some of the things that I don't cover, you know, maybe you'll cover in some of the questions. One very bright girl, also unmarried, said that she felt that the year in Israel creates an imaginary audience whose judgment the students subject themselves to religiously when they come back, insofar as dress, learning, davening, you know, brachot, everything is concerned. This imaginary audience is constantly asking them, how are you perceived? And this, she said, leads often to what she called committee dating. She said what happens is for girls, especially when they come back from a date, they have to, all their friends have to weigh in And what started out as a possibly good date gets diluted. The match is often nixed by the friends before it even gets to the second date because they say, maybe you don't want that, maybe you don't want that. Or, you know who he's dated previously? And she said people get boxed and pigeonholed into things because of who they dated previously and who they are. Whereas, like she said, I dated some very modern kids, you know, very modern young men. So now people don't want them to set me up with boys who are, you know, more into learning. But the reason I rejected those more modern young men is because I wanted someone who's more learned and more into learning. So why are they rejecting me on the basis of the people that I dated if I rejected those who are inappropriate and so on? She also warned that the teachers in Israel come across, even though they are often very young and inexperienced, as very knowledgeable, worldly, they give the impression that they know who they are very, very strongly. And they tell the students that you know what you know. She was concerned about the aspect of that sometimes the Israel people actually validate the secular culture. She made an observation about the fact that she said to me, Mrs. Billet, you grew up before the video age. You don't know any films by heart. She said, do you know my generation? We know films upon films by heart because we have watched them over and over and over again. And we know, you know, the romantic portions and the romantic paragraphs, etc., of these things. And we have certain feelings about what romance should be like. And she actually said that she felt that some of the Israel points reinforced some of the negative points of the Hollywood, you know, movie thing that there's a lot of love at first sight, there's a lot about validating a certain culture, etc. So there are many things to think about. I believe that the whole shidduch problem, shidduch crisis, whatever you might want to call it, is much larger than just the year in Israel. A lot of kids come home from the year in Israel just fine and just with their heads screwed on right and feeling, you know, very in charge of their lives. The problem is much larger. There's a lot of a lack, I think, of common sense wisdom about the dating process. One little sentence that I have used in some of my talks, which I really, really like. Again, it's not focused on the year in Israel as much, but it's such a pithy thing. It was actually, I think, Rabbi Norman Lamb who made the comment. He said, you know, trying to fall in love and find the right person is like going into the perfume store. Everybody's attracted to the perfumes that are called exotic fantasy, erotic passion, miracle ecstasy, and that nice little quiet perfume called reasonable expectations that's sitting in the corner nobody wants. I have a lot of, you know, different thoughts about the process. I've done a lot of thinking, a lot of research, a lot of premarital counseling over my years of serving at my husband's side in terms of our shul and in terms of our young people. In some of my previous schools, we actually taught a 12th grade class, which we called Jewish Family Life, in which we emphasized many aspects of finding, building, dating, mating, you know, and working on your family. And I remember one of the most, I guess, important questions that I was ever asked in that course was, Mrs. Billet, who is teaching these things to the boys? So I leave you, I hope, with some observations and some food for thought, and Rabbi Rubin's 20 minutes, and then we'll reconvene.
It's usually difficult to speak second, and this is certainly a very hard slot to fill, especially after hearing Ms. Billet speak about so many of the issues that are pervasive and that touch upon some of the boy and girls' experiences at the same time. But I'll try to not to be repetitive and maybe just take some different approaches, but where necessary, I would like to repeat some of the points that Rebbetzin Billet had mentioned. First of all, let me thank Michael for calling this evening together. Leadership requires a lot of bold and visionary steps to take, and Michael really is, in his own quiet and not so quiet way, quite a bold and visionary leader. Many people see a problem, but few actually step up to the plate to try to make a change. And I'm grateful to you, and I think actually your involvement is quite inspirational.
If anybody would like to continue watching Michael's involvement and leadership, read the Jewish Week any given week and look at the letters to the editor. He has more letters to the editor than the editor has. I'm not sure how he does it. I actually started studying his style of writing to figure out if there's something I can do to duplicate it. I thought I'd just write a letter and say nothing, just gibberish, and then sign Michael Feldstein, and I bet it would be submitted. That's the point that Michael Feldstein writes. They're already publishing it. So thank you, Michael, for all of your thoughts. And I've always been very impressed with what the written and the spoken word. It's an honor to sit in the panel with Revison Billet here and hosting us in the school. And hello to local parents and parents who came from afar, especially from the Ray Kushner Yeshiva High School. I just had to say that. Before I begin my 20 minutes, which didn't start yet, please estimate, this is a little bit risky, just to raise your hands, parents of, well, I guess you have boys and girls. I'm just trying to get a sense if you're here to hear mostly from the girl side or mostly from the boy side. I think it's the best I can do to try to hone this in without getting a statistician. And how many here are like really curious about the girl issue? Okay. And how many here are just really curious about the boy issue? All right, so those don't have the advantage. If I have it, looks like 2-1. Okay, right, mainly. That's what I said. You need a statistician to figure this out. Okay, how many here are for both boys and girls? Well, that's going to be everyone. I don't think there's any category that I missed. Right, but obviously if you have multiple genders in your house, and that really just ring a bell for both and it resonates. The question was, how does this affect... one more word before I begin my 20 minutes. Usually when I prepare a talk, I give a lot of thought, as I should. I mean, that's really, one would expect that. I'm not looking for accolades or cheers. You should give thought into what you're about to say. But I really do try to spend a serious thought on anything, and any time I have the honor to speak and to address an audience. This was a little bit different because this one, people would stop me in the street and say, well, what are you going to say? And I'd say, why don't you tell me what you're thinking? Which was a perfect opportunity just to listen. And I, you know, listened to Revson Billet saying just over and over again, people had so much to say about this issue. And I don't know if I'm more informed than you are, if you have parents who are veterans at this. But I guess the big advantage I have is that I've just listened to more people in preparation for this evening. So now, the question was, how does the Israel year or two affect Shiduchim? And I'm going to try to break it up into two categories. One, exactly the question, how does it affect? And two, maybe just some minor, obvious observations is what we can say as to what we can do, not to remedy it, but at least to address it. I'm not completely convinced that we should use the word crisis. I'm not there yet. I don't know what the statistics are to get to that point. I don't want to, in any way... create a larger problem that may exist. It's certainly an issue for many families, and I know that. I don't know what percentage point you have to get to before something is a crisis. I think we would all agree we're in an economic crisis. That's pretty obvious. I don't know if we're really in a shidduch crisis. We're certainly dealing with an issue, but I'm not sure I know what the definition of crisis is. And I'm saying that because I want to try to avoid rhetoric or to contribute to a perception which may create more of a kind of a visceral or a more extreme response. And we always have to be careful never to respond to anything in an extreme way. A couple of more introductory points. There are multiple reasons if there is indeed a shidduch problem, a shidduch crisis, and it would be unfair to try to simplify this problem by identifying one overriding issue. There really isn't one overriding issue. Society is complex. Family life in the United States in our generation has become much more complex than it was when many of us are younger, when we're younger. The media has certainly complicated things, both what's portrayed on television and in the movies. The world of electronics, Revison Billet touched upon it a little, the connectivity that kids have with one another in an electronic way, which is actually not a personal way. The human touch, the human endeavor, the human engagement, although seems like it's on the increase, is actually on the decrease. And the way that kids talk to each other electronically is quite differently from the way they'll talk to each other humanly. And this kind of bifurcated personality has to have something to do with the way we create bonds and relationships. I'm not here to speak as a sociologist, but here as an observer who's been involved for high school education for many years, and I can see the way that impacts and the way that kids deal with one another. I've also, for many years, have had a problem with the way that Hollywood presents relationships, romantic or casual, because it creates this kind of a model that is completely fabricated, not connected to reality. And I think when kids grow up thinking that these are the models, these are the relationships that they're going to strive to somehow meet, it's something which is an impossibility. That also, to some degree, that people have been writing about has to affect the way we do relationship, have relationships, and also the socioeconomic class of the modern Orthodox American Jewry has also affected marriages in the sense that kids can get married earlier. Those of you who came from different communities and perhaps were not born into a comfortable socioeconomic class, you may have heard your parents say at one point, as soon as you can stand on your own two feet and support yourself married and talking to other boys, you can get married. And we're living in a time which is a bracha to some degree that the modern Orthodox community has been overall, and I know there are plenty of people who are struggling, I'm not trying to make generalizations, make anyone feel bad, but the modern Orthodox community, by and large, has become more or less a successful community, and as a result it has created new options for kids that just didn't exist in our generation. So these are just some of the factors that I can point to that probably have very little to do with Israel, maybe directly, indirectly have to do with Israel. So therefore, to simplify it by saying what has Israel done, I just want to avoid, but nevertheless, it is a very big part of it. So now my 20 minutes begins. Here I go. Sorry, Michael, I guess that's my last invitation. That's part of my plan, you see. Rookie has one plan. Rookie just says no until she gets a yes, and then I'll just ruin my entire presentation so that we're not going to invite that guy again. Really is interesting, but an hour and a half was much too long. So I want to start now. How has the Israel program affect Israel? 1 or 2 years have affected shidduchim. First of all, and I'm talking to the girls, contrasted to it, but I want to spend a little bit more time. Boys seek the opinion of rebbes. Psychologists in the room, mental health experts in the room could probably give us some more background as to why. My job is not to do that; it's just to make an observation. The concept of Das Torah has permeated Das Torah within the yeshiva community is that the rebbes, the Rosh Yeshivas, have this type of overarching knowledge that most people don't have. And if you can attach yourself to a rebbe, you can have the benefit of getting insights that you and your family and the people close to you would not normally be able to connect with. So these insights come from Talmidei Chachamim, and it's called Das Torah. And rebbes that do present themselves as Das Torah create relationships with some of their students, not all of their students, and not all of the yeshiva. We have to be very careful. There's a wide range of schools there, and I don't want to make broad stereotypes of what kind of schools exist, and all are falling into this. But this type of Das Torah, in a way, takes away some of our boys' autonomy. And taking away their autonomy, coming from a modern Orthodox community where autonomy is what we take so much pride in, where autonomous people in our social lives, in our economic lives, in our religious lives, we listen to our rabbi, but we don't necessarily cling to our rabbi. We respect our rabbi, but we don't exactly drink every word that the rabbi says. In fact, the rabbis of your communities should be engaging in debate and dialogue. Our whole system of education is dialogical. It's something which is Socratic. It starts that way in the beginning of middle school and goes all the way through high school. And yet when kids go to Israel, they lose this autonomy. They become much more connected to their Rebbe. And this Das Torah creates a sense of security for our boys, for whatever reason they didn't have before. Again, it's moving to more of the mental health department. But that's a Das Torah which sometimes takes the autonomy and hence does affect shidduchim. Because then what happens is that boys will turn to their Rebbe, should I marry, should I date, what is the best time, what is this girl? Now, that could have some advantages, and let's remember that not all systems work. The systems that we came from, I'm making a huge assumption that we all came from the same system, but considering that I'm one of the older people in the room, the systems that we went out on our own and got married, well, not in any way casting any shadows or being in any way critical, but not every marriage relationship that we knew when we were growing up actually endured and worked out. There isn't one system that works. So we have to be careful not to pass too much judgment when we describe what we're seeing. This is a cultural shift. This is a paradigm shift. This is one that's different. And it's hard for us because we're on the back end of a cutting edge movement that we're not part of because we're from a different generation. Now, again, I'm not trying to pass judgment, but just to share an observation. I remember my Rosh Yeshiva, who was the chief rabbi of Israel, before his chief rabbi of Israel, Rav Avram Shapira, used to be very annoyed with He mentioned names, but I wouldn't. I wouldn't take that license of some of the great gedolim of the yeshiva movement for creating Das Torah Psak Halacha for entire communities of tens of thousands of people in the Lithuanian yeshiva movement, not in the Hasidic movement. And he said that in Europe, no matter how great the Rosh Yeshiva was in the community, the rabbi had the final word. Because the Rosh Yeshiva is too disconnected and disassociated with the daily lives and challenges to give appropriate and sound and coherent and cogent guidance. The people who are most capable of giving cogent guidance were those who were engaged in life. Rosh Yeshivot, for all of the Das Torah they may have, giving our kids sometime a bit of a disadvantage because they're a little bit disengaged from some of the pressures and the tensions and the realities and the expectations our kids have before they left or had before they left, and certainly when they come back. And that's something which has affected us, and it also affects girls. And I'm trying not to speak about the girls' situation, but how the boys affect girls, because that is that a boys will call his Rebbe and speak to the Rebbe either on the phone or in person, and the Rebbe doesn't have much to go on. Just what the boy is describing, and will make decisions. And a girl, if the boy comes back, and oftentimes boys do have a tendency of acting a little bit Neanderthal-y in their communication skills, they do grow up and mature and begin to learn how to communicate with other people. For those who are parents of boys, some have to wait a really long time until the grunting goes away and the grunting morphs into actually talking in words. You can get things out of your children, by the way. I once, this is not part of the 20 minutes, that was a little bit of a break. I got a phone call from my son. I was working very late one night, and he said, if I can pick him up from the yeshiva. I said, yes, on one condition. That the entire, it was in your house, it was in West Orange. No, not yours, when you were there that night. I said to him, on one condition, the condition is that from the time I pick you up until I get home, you have to talk. And sure enough, I drove around 20 miles an hour. The poor boy struggled to find words. It was one of my best nights of parenting I could remember. By the way, mothers are usually very successful, more than fathers, of getting boys to talk. Be persistent. No matter how angry they get at you, keep on going at them, because you're giving them an important skill. It's called communication, and they'll appreciate it. But the concept of Das Torah does have an effect not only on Kiddushin, but it also has an effect on the life they choose for themselves, the type of a profession that they choose, and obviously has implications in college, which is not for tonight's question. You can see this also in the boys that come back from Israel, do get married, and they call and invite their Rebbe from Israel to be the Masada Kedushin. I've always found that very puzzling, that they can be in a community for 17, 18, 19 years, have the rabbi spend an integral part of the kids' lives, both in the family and a personal level. They go to Israel for a year, come back, and as someone said to me just moments ago, who also had the same observation, the rabbi will be invited to the wedding and read the ksuba, where the Rosh Yeshiva from Israel, who may have had the boy for 1 year, is in Masada Kedushin. And that's for a different evening's discussion, but that's an interesting observation to make and how it affects boy psyche. Number two, boys are, the yeshivas in Israel, and again, you have to be very careful, and I wish I can make this clearer, but it will take away too much of my 20 minutes. There are many different types of yeshiva in Israel, and I don't want this to be a scare evening. Israel is a great place for kids to go after the year in high school, no matter what high school they went to. It's not for every child, but it's for many, many children. Most, I would say. There are many different programs that are opening up yearly. Rev. Zambilla can certainly attest to that. We get around 6 phone calls a year of new programs that the kids have to hear about, which of course they don't, because we don't want to do that. We don't want to expose our kids to programs that haven't been vetted and tested. But there are new programs, new ideas, new opportunities, especially for girls. In the last few years, it's been a very exciting development. And I certainly don't want this to be interpreted as sending his children to Israel is a risk for your child's emotional, religious, and social development. That's not the case. But I do want to address the question as how it affects it. So it does seem like a concentrate on that affects it negatively, which is really not my feeling at all. I think it's, by and large, a very healthy and a positive experience. And like anything else, everything has risks. Any experience that we expose our children to have risks. But those risks are also opportunities for growth. So let's keep that aside on the side as we talk. Number two, the first is to lose their autonomy. The second is that yeshivos in Israel sometimes create stereotypes about people, and particularly in this case about girls, and this is true, I think, although Ms. Bill didn't say it, I think it's also girls to boys. But that's not my mandate. You go to a particularly, when boys hear about girls, the yeshiva that they attended will begin to define who they are. Is it a serious yeshiva? Is it a liberal yeshiva? Is it a pluralistic yeshiva? Is it narrow yeshiva? Is it right wing? Is it left wing? Is it any wing? Does it have wings? Does it want wings? It should growing wings. The girls have wings. And after they're finished going through it, it actually narrows the field to whom these boys are actually willing to date. Ms. Bill said something similar from a different vein. And this is true, by the way, and it carries into college, especially the New York City-based colleges that have enormous Hillels in Jewish communities. The kids often tell me, our graduates have often told me, that they're pigeonholed into the group. If the girls wear pants, then that's one group. If the boys went to Israel, that's another group. If they went to Israel but didn't go on a yeshiva program, that's another group. If they didn't go to Israel at all, well, they're still in another group. And the larger the college, the more prevalent this problem, the smaller the college, the less of a problem this is, because kids just have to make do. So this type of stereotype, and I think, does harm us. It limits our opportunity to offer to our children, offer that they can be exposed to different types of personalities that just may work. It really just may work. I had the privilege of having dinner Friday night with an old dear friend of mine that I grew up with, and we were going around the table around this conversation about how the shidduch thing in Israel, and you know, asking, okay, so how did you meet? And one said, well, I went to camp co-ed, and I went to camp Haredi, and we met, and we didn't want to do it, but nevertheless, and here we are, you know, 40 years later, and we're married. Not 40, but I'm just trying to make sure no one knows who I'm talking about. 40 years later, and we're married. Well, I don't think that could happen so much. I don't think that's as prevalent anymore. And I think that's a big problem. And I don't know if it's only about Israel, but it's certainly an issue that we have to deal with that Israel is helping to create because of the stereotypical identity that is born out of an Israel experience, as opposed to a born identity, which is stereotypical. Three. Boys are told by their rebbes, and this is interesting, and I spoke to confirm this, I actually spoke to some young ladies to find out if this is true on the girls' side. I can't make a stereotype. It's not as broad as I'm painting it. There are some schools that do this. There's certainly schools that don't do it. There are some wonderful rebbes. The brainwashing is not, by the way, part of the Israel experience. I've always kind of shudder when I hear that people think that it's a brainwashing. I was teaching in Israel for many years on the other side. It's certainly not when you get your little mandate to teach, okay, this is the brainwashing experience we want our kids to go in. There's some very fine, wonderful, young, middle-aged, senior people in Israel who are engaged in the chinuch for all the right reasons, who are idealistic, who love Torah, who love the future of Am Yisrael, who are committed to Eretz Yisrael. There's so much beauty out there, but that said, there are some rebbes that don't want their children to fall into the temptation, passionate trap. And knowing quite well that when boys begin dating girls, it could create a certain sense of, it could create vulnerabilities halachically as far as intimacy is concerned. And not dating girls could also create problems as far as intimacy and halachic vulnerabilities. And speaking in vague terms, I hope that it's pretty clear. So there are some rebbes in some schools, remember, carrying the Das Torah record now with me, will actually tell their students it's better to get married very young. And if you get married very young, you know that although you'll have some adjusting, you'll grow together, you'll build a beautiful life together, and you also won't fall into halachic traps. Now, I don't want to get into the issue of getting married young and not getting married young, because it works for some and it doesn't work for others, and we're all kind of like certainly 40 and up in this room, and I'm sure you can look at people who got married younger and they have beautiful marriages, and you can look at married people who got older and they have beautiful marriages, and the other way. I don't think there's a formula for marriage. Marriage is really complex. It's a complex, I got to work out a type of an attitude that changes as we change, as we grow and as we develop and we have shift in our lives, so do our marriages and our children change and the challenges that come with it. There are no easy answers to this, but so I can't say that that works or doesn't work, but that affects the shidduch scene, getting married young. So I actually mentioned this to a young lady, and she told me, and I wonder if this is true, if this is prevalent across the board. She said to one of her rebbes told her he'd rather see her not be halachically consistent as far as intimacy than get married for the wrong reasons. Now that's a very bold statement to make, And I'm not really sure if that is universal. And we also know that even if it were true, part of the problem of young people getting married, and we all know this as parents, is that they kind of confuse why they're getting married. And intimacy in the modern world, I think, creates a whole other set of problems for young people getting married that in the halacha community we don't really deal with as much. Because it confuses kids when they're dating and they have an intimate relationship in the sense of what do they really love? It's their first relationship, sometimes their second, that has a passion attached to it, that has a physical component to it, and it can become very confusing for boys and girls. What is it that really is attracting them to this girl? So I'm keeping it open as a discussion. I'm not passing judgment. Three. So we had Das Torah, stereotypes is two. Getting married early to avoid halachic obligations is three. And this is something that Rebbetzin Billet touched upon. There's a lot of tension and conflict that kids experience upon their return. There's a lot of conflicting values. It really isn't a time for marriage. And that's something which I think I can say pretty unequivocally. Kids should have the opportunity to settle in, to get the dust to settle, to realign their values and themselves in a world that's not as idealistic. They idealized their lives in Israel when they saw the Rebbe's home, the children, the happiness, the bliss. Some kids who come from families that are a little bit, that are experiencing difficulties and challenges between parents. A lot of times when kids go to Israel and they go to the Rebbe's house for Shabbos and they see just harmony and peace and tranquility and just a sense of goodness and giving. Of course, the goodness and giving is that the guy is sitting down and eating and his wife is serving him all the food. That's let's be real. That's what they're seeing. And the guy's voice says, "Oh, I'd really like to have something like this." Yeah, well, I'll show you what. It's illegal. It's called slavery. But this kind of idealized life, it doesn't really exist anywhere. It doesn't exist in Israel. It exists on Friday night in Rebbe's home for an hour and a half. Because on Saturday night, when everybody goes home, then, you know, they have their tensions and their economic problems and their parents and their siblings and their children who are acting up and who have different disabilities. It doesn't come out necessarily Friday night. And that snapshot of idealism shouldn't inform decisions when kids come back, too. Another conflict is earning versus learning. You must have heard this one already. I did not make up that term. I sometimes say I make up terms, and my kids are the most honest critics that you can possibly hope for in life are your children, and they constantly tell me I did not make up that term. So there's some terms like hit and run, for instance. If you like baseball, I like to think I made up that term. My boy pointed out to me that I didn't. It has been around since around 1904. But I made it popular, I told him. earning and learning. Okay, that's going to take a while to sort out. Rebbetzin Billet touched upon it. I don't need to go down there. Dveikus and reality. Boys come home from Israel really charged up. They're really full of dveikus. Many, not all. Some don't. And if your boy didn't come home that way, there's nothing wrong with him. You don't need to call up Israel and get your money back. My boy didn't come home full of dveikus. You promised me dveikus and I didn't get dvit. I got nothing. I didn't even get a dollar out of this. Don't worry about it. Everyone is different. Remember, we used to take the kids when in my old school, before I used to be a principal in another school, we used to take kids to Poland every year in the senior year for the heritage trip. And there was always kids who would come back and say, "I walked through the camps and I didn't cry." Well, you know, everybody's got their own experiences in life and their own hearts and their own, and maybe you'll cry in 2 years from now, maybe you won't cry. I don't know. There's nothing wrong with you that you can cry. Everybody gets affected differently. And if your son comes home without dveikus, without even dvih, then don't worry about it. But there is a dveikus reality tension. Three, that they need to reconnect to someone here. There's a big void in their lives. They had this amazing Das Torah personality that meant so much to them, and then they come back, and the community rabbi just, and I don't say this disparagingly, doesn't always do it, because the rabbis are dealing with compromises and non-perfect worlds. And they're looking to make shalom often more than they're looking to be dogmatic and declarative. And that's, rabbis in Israel can be very declarative because they don't declare for anything. Just say what they have to say and they move on. Rabbis in America have very serious responsibilities in communities. And high school rabbis sometimes could have a very major role. High school principals sometimes, I find, not so much for the same reason that they find that, well, you compromised on this when you were, and you compromised on that. And the Rebbe represents this pure kind of notion of what Torah means. So they need to find somebody when when they come back, and that takes them time. They should wait. They need to create character and strength and deal with their challenges. Getting married and figuring out things later doesn't work. It doesn't work for money. It doesn't work for emotions. It doesn't work for families. It doesn't work for mothers-in-law. It doesn't work for fathers-in-law. And certainly doesn't work for religious and passionate beliefs about Torah. I'm going to conclude in just 3 minutes, quickly say what you can do as a very minor remedy. Some of them were mentioned by Rebbetzin Billet. One, research your schools very well. Most high schools, yeshiva high schools, have elaborate systems of counselors and guidance people. Try to find out what they stand for, what they believe in. When I was teaching in Israel, I was hired in one yeshiva to be the token white man, which is a term I made up, which means that they needed to tell their constituents that they had a Rebbe that was Zionistic, that came from a Zionistic yeshiva, and that had experiences that would give them credentials. And I was always resented that and felt that I was being a little bit exploited when I was in that yeshiva. Be careful who they send to speak to America. Speak to boys and girls who graduate. It's great. Check their website. Find graduates. Big indicator about what schools to send your children to, ask them about college. That goes together. College in Israel and kids getting married are all in one little bundle. Two, set a line in the sand for things that count. And don't send a line in the sand for things that don't. Because a lot of times as parents, we think that we're going to really put up so many fights that we're going to retake control of our children's lives. It's very hard to take control of your children's lives when they're 20 or 21. It's very difficult. So you want to do is, not that I have so much success in anything I've done as a parent, but it's certainly much easier for me to tell you what to do than it is for me to do what I do in my home. Try to pick your battles. That's true. It starts at 2, and it doesn't really end until they make you... I guess they bring us in when we retired. Three, don't be afraid to engage rebbes in Israel. If you feel that your children are hearing things that are a little bit foreign and not aligned to your family culture, pick up a phone. It's very, very important to do that. And my last comment before I conclude is don't misinterpret, although I've said this, don't misinterpret anything I'm saying as a non-endorsement or less than an extreme enthusiastic commitment to this year of study in Israel. It's got great benefits, great advantages. The more we're informed, the more we can get the best for our children. Thank you.
We'll take some questions, which can be directed to either one of the two panelists in the back. Why don't you state your name also and just speak loudly.
that is a personal decision that you can make.
If I may answer, it depends what age they get married. Depends how old they are when they get married.
Some people were just telling us that the girls and boys will date while they're in Israel, and then by kind of the time the boys stop dating for the next 5 years, because they realize they're in Israel, they have till April, May, whatever, they start being serious, so by December everyone breaks up. And then they come back to America, they don't date them for several years, and everything's like out of kilter. Comments, suggestions, understanding of that?
Right. Boys, what I didn't want to say, but this is, I guess, a big part of it. There's a huge disparity in the marriage market between boys and girls. Boys feel, and again, I'm not passing judgment, and I'm not in any way endorsing or validating his point of view. Just explaining an observation, which I think we all have. Boys feel that they can take their time and be patient. And if they get married at 25 or 26 and they find a 21-year-old girl or a 22-year-old woman, then that's fine. So I think that somewhere along the line, they have in the back of their mind, they have this reserve time, this padding time. Whereas girls, and Reverend Billet commented before, I think under enormous pressure to get married younger, because once they hit a certain age, it's harder for them to find a market of boys that makes them that could be attracted to them. So I think that could be true. It depends on the yeshiva. But also, your assumption in your comments is that if they had a boyfriend and a girlfriend at 18, that if they wouldn't have broken up, they would have gotten married. There's no way to say that that's the case. In fact, I can look at maybe 24 high school boy-girl romances that ended in the first year of college. Dozens. And that's it makes all the sense in the world for kids when they're going out in high school and you think they're set to get married.
And then something happens in the first year of college, which is not too different from the first year in Israel. So I know I didn't answer it. I think the trend exists, but I don't know if it's necessarily linked to what happens in Israel.
I also think it's very hard to generalize on that one, because also you do see high school kids that are dating in their senior year. They go to Israel, they don't date, they come back, and then they date and they get married. You see many different patterns. I know some boys, for example, who were very active socially, like you said, at the beginning of their Israel stint. Then they flipped. They called all the girls that had, they had their cell phones and told them, not talking to you anymore until I'm ready for tachlis, quote unquote. And, you know, went back after Shana Bet, stayed another year, then started dating, got married very quickly, and that's all. So the patterns, you can't stereotype, I think.
Yes, right over here.
Okay, my first comment is, unfortunately, it's still a man's world. My second comment is, in terms of the shidduch crisis you mentioned, have you been to the Lower East, to the West Side lately? 30-year-old girls can't get married, 35-year-old girls, it's just disgraceful. My next comment is, my aunt and uncle met at Poel HaMizrahi. When I was dating, YU had events, the Purim Chagiga. A girl can actually go in there and actually dance. But today, where do you meet if you're not on the list? It's a serious problem.
Well, actually, I could address that issue.
How is the Jewish community supposed to be continuing if our singles are not getting together and getting married? It's a serious problem. Serious.
Okay, I don't think we can really turn back the clock and go back to young Israel dances that happened 50, 60, 70 years ago. That's not going to happen. It's a different culture now. I think that to expect that kind of environment is, I think we're fooling ourselves. However, I think that there's room for more opportunities for events where young religious singles can get together and meet and mingle and get together, and good things will happen. And one of the things that we're trying to do at In the Madness is create more opportunities for singles to meet in natural and less pressurized settings. So what we're trying to create are events that don't feel like singles events. I think there's all of these singles events out there, and there are plenty of them, but, you know, speed dating, the focus being so much on, you know, finding your basher, the weekends where you go up to the mountains, you spend $300, and if you don't come back with the person you're going to marry, you're going to feel like you just, you know, lost $300 and you feel miserable. What we're trying to do is create environments where people can feel comfortable and good things will happen. So chesed events, I think, you know, Mrs. Billard talked about that. Create an event that people will feel good about participating in, and then, you know, naturally men and women are going to meet and good things will happen. We have a Shabbaton model at In the Madness that's different than the usual single Shabbaton. Instead of putting all the singles in one room and expecting them to meet and shidduchim to happen, what we do is we create a Shabbaton where the singles are broken out into groups of six, three men and three women, and they eat the meals at hosts' homes. So it's much more natural. It's less pressurized. So. Again, we've had events for under 30. We've had events from 25 to 35, different age groups depending on the Shabbaton. So, again, I think our model is to, again, create environments where singles can feel that the event itself is something meaningful. And even if they don't find their bashert at that event, they're still going to enjoy the event. But by putting like-minded people into an event together where they can talk and meet and mingle, good things will happen. And thank God we've had some successes.
So moving forward, if I wanted to set up a singles event for 19 to 24-year-olds for a shir, would that be something you would be interested in helping?
Talk to me after the program. Okay. And again, we've had Dvar Torah clubs. I mean, that's a perfect example where people come, they share Divrei Torah together, and afterwards they have some pizza soda, talk to each other. Perfect example. I'd love to work with you on that.
They don't want to go to those kind of events. They won't go because it's a
summer, they had separate at night women and boy, the boy and girls urine for counselors. Like, why couldn't like urine be together? So they themselves are separating themselves.
It's a good question. I don't have any address.
I wish it was different. I wish.
Coming from the rabbis, from the yeshivas, or the rabbis and yeshivas saying, you know, don't talk to girls, don't flirt with girls, don't go up to girls and ask them, what happened to girls? I mean, my eldest is in Israel for the year, so I'm just, but what happened to a boy going up to a girl at a wedding and going, hi?
They're not seeing it at the
same table. How are you doing? Now. You know, what happens to the same table? What happens to the flirting? I don't mean to. Everything is separate. There's separate seating. The mechitza is this high. I mean, is it coming from the rebbe? Where is this coming from?
A lot of it is local interpretation of Torah.
from who?
There are different institutions and modalities that have, and I think that Michael may have been, to some degree, influenced, inspired him as much as he could to change that by different Torah organizations that had taken a stronghold for the way that Torah lifestyle should be led. And that has, for many years, had taken over the modern Orthodox community, both from the teachers that are teaching in the schools and the uber institutions that are influencing downward. And I think we have to try as best as we can to work with our local leadership to actually break those chains and to make a change. It won't happen unless there's a strong enough voice from the grassroots. It just won't happen. There's one yeshiva in Farakaway that's changing that, and a very strong-minded, visionary Rosh Yeshiva who would be more aligned with the yeshiva community said that single boys and girls should be sitting together at the weddings. But it's still more the exception than the rule. And I think the voices of our people are much more important than waiting for things to change on their own. By the way, just one word, it hasn't been mentioned, is the internet is a bright spot in this entire revolution. YU Connects is taking a very serious approach to helping young people meet each other via the internet. And of course, Soyu at Sinai has an impressive record of Shidduch connections. And what's so nice about what YU is doing, to their credit, is that they're actually hiring coaches to sit with the boys and young men and young women when they uplink their information to try to help them package themselves in a way which would be more intelligent and more attractive. And I do think all of these small little efforts make a difference.
Rookie, you want to chime in?
I wanted to just mention that there is a lot of reason the girls that I spoke to encourage you that when you make weddings to have mixed seating. One girl said to me, and I wrote it down and I started as a quote, she said, when you're at a wedding with separate seating, you see who's good looking. When you're at a wedding with mixed seating, you see who's smart and who has ideas. And it just rang like such a pithy truth to me, and I really think it's an important thing to encourage. Even among those who are very firm, a lot of the boys and girls tell me that they would like it. And then they'll, at least be able, even those who are the firmest, will be able to have a little interaction and then be able to ask somebody, set me up with whatever, even if they're not going to be as comfortable as you said about just going over to somebody and saying, hi, how are you, who are you? But I think that there's a lot of awareness in our communities now. I had mentioned to someone today that we have a speaker in our shul. He happens to belong to our shul, Michael Solomon, who wrote the book called The Shidduch Crisis. And whereas we usually get about 40 people to a sisterhood meeting, we got 450 people who came from everywhere, not, the five towns, Queens, Brooklyn, etc. And it was a very interesting and somewhat passionate, event in which people expressed, their frustrations about the lack of meeting and about the West Side, as you said, and about the older singles that just seem to become more and more entrenched and less likely as they continue on to find the right person, although we do celebrate, many marriages of, 35 and 36-year-old, women, even sometimes to 30 and 32-year-old guys. And I applaud those men who have the courage, to do that and are not just looking for a 21-year-old chick. Forgive me, 21-year-olds, et cetera. And, But there's a lot of work to do.
Yes.
I have tried to make some shidduchim. I mean, I'm interested in one for my daughter as well, but I think it's important for all of us, you know, to make the effort to network, etc. But, you know, I've gotten the most absurd responses from young men. You know, does the girl's mother cover her hair? Some of these, these absurd things. And then, in fact, I had a good answer for one of them. He said he heard that this young woman I wanted to set him up with was a little bit on the heavy side, and he heard her mother was. He's a little worried what it's going to be like later on. And I said, you know what? Maybe you're going to be bald with a pot belly one day. So what are you looking for? And you know, some of these young men have this image of wanting to marry the perfectly intelligent, gorgeous young woman, and they're very judgmental. You look at a girl who may wear a skirt down to her ankles and way up high, and does this make a girl more frum than one who maybe is modern Orthodox, who is really very spiritual and is a very solidly frum girl? How are we going to shape these images and being judgmental of how a person looks? I'm not talking about somebody wearing unsneeze clothing, but it gets a little absurd.
I don't disagree with you.
So how do we change these attitudes of these young men?
Well, I think it's there's not an easy answer to that question. I think that part of it, though, has to start with, if you get these kinds of questions and refuse to answer them, don't play the game. I think, you know, unfortunately, there's this culture of fear that has enveloped the Orthodox community, where everybody is very fearful of, you know, going against the system for fear of what it's going to do to their own kid shidduch prospects. And I think that if you really feel strongly about something that's wrong in the world, or in you know, in the shidduch world, then I think we all have an obligation to make our voices known, you know, both to our leaders, our rabbis, and also I think we can gain some chizuk from knowing that there's a group of people here who may feel the same way. And part of it is gaining chizuk that you're not the only one who feels that way. So, you know, I encourage you to speak out and share those opinions with others. Yes?
How do we educate our kids to sort of recognize the signs? I have a friend whose daughter is 21, absolutely beautiful, has been in co-ed schools and camps her entire life, was away for a weekend. Somebody playing volleyball accidentally knocked her down and said, "Oh my goodness, I'm so sorry. Can I take you out for ice cream to make it up?" And she said, "No thanks, I really don't feel like ice cream." And when her mother said, "Didn't she get it? He ran you over to introduce himself so he could take you out." And the daughter said, "You're nuts, Mom." And the truth is, she totally missed all the signs. And this is not somebody who's been sheltered or sequestered. How do we, aside from fighting with our children, encourage them to recognize that there's, you know, people try to approach in a non-threatening, he tried as best as he could to get our attention. How do we teach them?
I believe that you keep talking. I believe that you have to expose kids to a lot of reading and let them learn how to be more worldly. Our kids, as you said earlier, are very influenced by Hollywood. I think that they need to, you know, read a little bit more, some older kinds of books. They need to then engage in discussions about them and you know, catch some cues that they might not, you know, be so aware of. And, you know, that's one thing. And I believe in that continuing dialogue between parents and children. Don't let it end. You know, foster it. You know, there are some parents who talk to all the kids in the carpool. They say, "Wow, you don't know what I learned in that carpool." You know, and open up the discussion, and even for those 15, 20 minutes, and ask the probing questions and try to then sneak your opinion in somewhere and... maybe it rings true sometimes.
Talk to your kids. It's good advice. Yes?
I just want to share some information that I have recently gotten from my college girls, one that went to Israel, one that didn't. And they're starting to feel extremely polarized, and that the modern Orthodox movement is falling away, that things are extremely polarized, that there's no middle ground anymore, that the dating is becoming extremely difficult, that there's a gap in what you're saying with the boys, that there's between 19 and 25, they're way, so there's no boys. They feel there's no boys to date, there's no boys to meet, that the YU boys, that the boys are staying, they're going back for Shauna Bett, and then they won't talk to the girls, and then there's these few years, and then the girls don't want to go back for Shauna Bett, and there's these big boys, and that there's these no more mixed seating, that many times there's no mixed seating. So these are things that these 19-year-old girls are feeling and are becoming so frustrated. And luckily, they are talking to us. Some girls' parents, they're not talking to their parents, but some of us are lucky enough to have the girls talk to them. But they're becoming so frustrated because they're saying, we can't date, we don't know who to date, the YU boys won't talk to us, they talked to us in high school, now they won't talk to us. These boys, it's extremely frustrating, and I feel like these children are living, I feel like we're living in the dark ages, and they're living in the dark ages. And you say to them, when you go on a date, go do something. Get a common ground. Go do an activity. Don't just sit and talk and do nothing. And we have to tell this to them because no one's telling them where to go, what to do. I don't know what they're telling. Or the boys are being told not to talk to a girl. And it's very frustrating.
I think it's very hard to generalize. I know one of the people that I interviewed told me about her friend who has four daughters, and she said one daughter is married to someone not Orthodox. One daughter is married to a modern Orthodox person. One daughter married yeshivish, but is to a learner-earner, and the last daughter only wants kollel, and she's still dating. So you know, I think you can't generalize necessarily when you see a gamut like that in even just one family, and the parents are quite modern Orthodox. I think people should not become frustrated, you know, to the best of their abilities. I think people should always be encouraged. I always say to people, you only need one. And that's an important thing to remember. I know when I sent my daughter to a certain, when I didn't send my daughter to a certain high school, I met a friend of mine who graduated from high school with me who said, you just lost 200 shidduchim by sending her to the wrong high school. And I said, well, I only need one, and all the people that don't want us, we don't want them anyway. So it's okay. And, it's a big world out there. And I think that it's very important to try to tap into out-of-town communities and send our kids places. I know, for example, YU sends kids to these Torah tours for Sin Plus Torah. Sometimes things, emerge from that from communities. I think it's a very nice thing. And we need to encourage our kids to, take advantage of, even though there are limited things available, of what is available and to, participate in clubs, activities, etc., that, especially if they are in Stern YU, there are some things that have common ground. I just met a student of mine, and she told me she was engaged. I said, how'd you meet him? And she said, well, I was the president of the, I don't want to say which society in YU, in Stern, and he was the vice president of the same society in YU, and we knew each other, and then one of our friends said, hey, why don't you go out? And we did, and the rest is history. So, I think that there are, with the frustrations, there are some good things, that happen, and we have to seize them.
In the green blush.
Well, I have a comment and a question. So first, the comment that I'd like to say is combat the polarization. I think it's important that we all ourselves, behave as a bridge and make sure that we don't polarize ourselves and bring in people and the Torah and the events and whatever it is from all walks into our lives and be a role model for coming together. So that was one. That's the comment that I'd like to make. And the question that I have is about the year in Israel. dynamic that a child tries to, like, almost DAFKA, not quite DAFKA because they're not really always aware of it, but they kind of DAFKA are trying to sort of separate from their parents and create another identity, separate identity from the parent. And what is the parent, best way for the parent to deal with that?
I'm going to defer to mental health experts. I'm being very serious. The process that you're calling is called individuation, and that it's a very natural process for adolescents to create their identity. For those of you who are raising girls, there was a book that I read many years ago. It's probably not popular anymore because books come and go. Something of the title, Mom, Get Out of My Life, But Please Take Me and Cheryl to the Mall. Anybody read that book? But it's a great book to read if you're raising daughters. It gives you a whole different perspective on what kids are really looking for when they're pushing off, because often what they're pushing off is they really want you back. A psychologist friend of mine told me a story that he was there was a symposium of psychologists that were dealing with kids' frustrations in college. They're all college psychologists. And he said that the biggest demand on psychologists' time in major universities is the weekend after Thanksgiving for freshmen. He said, why? He said, because kids come home and they find that their parents turn their bedrooms into studies and gyms. And they're horrified. You know, for parents, they've moved out. It's a complex issue. It takes a lot of sensitivity. And I think what you're touching upon, though, is when kids begin to create this new identity, how much of it is adolescent rebellion? And how much of it is this new attachment to an ideal that they think is just beautiful? And that's very hard for them, because we can't tease it out for them, and neither could they. So sometimes it's okay and encouraged to seek professional help outside of a family. Not necessarily rabbinic help. I think mental health people are trained in this, and they should be getting that attention. Just a word of your comment before. There's certain girls in Stern have also different types of experiences. For those who have daughters in Stern College or daughters-in-law who attended Stern, they have their pressures also about getting married. Many of them do, not all. And that also creates some frustration. And I think the role that we could play in this, besides what I said before about grassroots and what Michael said is that speaking up, I think that if people aren't speaking up more about this on a professional, on a rabbinic level, on a yeshiva level, it's wrong. But it's also important to try to help clear away some doom and gloom. Kids are not getting married as quickly as they want to be, because then kids are apt to making poor decisions in the haste of trying to get married and keep up with some of the pressures that they're experiencing. There's enormous pressure on girls to get married at a young age, and we can never underestimate that. Especially as you commented before, is that it's not a fair table. It's imbalanced. So we have tough roles as parents, as girls, and I agree with you. I think also, an observer, and I'm not a YU person, I didn't go to YU, I never met the Rav, I never had shiurim by him, I didn't drive him around, he didn't tell me any special secrets, I can't write any books about Rav Soloveitchik. I actually saw him once in my life, but that, I have one story, but big deal. I don't know much about him. I think to YU's credit, it was a long time when they were a little bit dormant in this world, and it started building up momentum, this separation, this polarization, this yeshivish thing that was going on. I think they're a little bit more sensitive to it, and there are many voices in YU now. It's creating more pluralistic, which down the line may help.
Yes, over here.
I think it's very important for parents to really be the first people who are making sure that their children are going to the co-ed camps, if they're sending their children to non-co-ed schools, that their children are exposed to the opposite sex. Because to say that I'm going to wait until there's a wedding for my child to be sitting opposite a girl for the first time, he's not going to know how to speak to her if that's the first time he's sitting across from her.
I think that's a good point.
And so it's really important for us to be doing this before they get to the point where the yeshivot, where Israel takes over and starts, whether it is the brainwashing effect or otherwise, there are so many years where we can affect how they see things and how they think about things, and whether or not they're exposed to everybody and not just their own.
I think it's an excellent point. I think we need to teach socialization skills at an earlier age. I think that's good advice for all parents. In the back.
Getting back to your comment about YU and just rabbis in general, the rest of this subject when it goes down stern, process is done by committee. You know, like there's no boy asks a girl out, they go to third party throughout the whole process, you know, and then they call up the third party after the date, do they want a second date? I mean, this whole so much lust and horror is engendered through the whole thing. And like I say, everybody has to give an opinion and they box the person in based on whatever. There's no getting to know another person at all. Like after first date right away, is it an absolute hit? Do they agree on how are they compatible at every level? Like I just know that this, I don't think half of our marriages would have happened if we would have been under those kinds of circumstances. I mean, I think, you know, friendship and love grows. And it's just, you know, out of somewhere along the line, they're missing that piece. And everything has to be fitting perfectly in place, you know, before the first date to even have a date, then after the first date, like the expectations are so high.
Right.
And then everybody has a piece of the puzzle. Everybody has to have their own opinion. Like, there's no privacy in the dating, you know, world. I'm just saying, I really think that maybe this does come from Israel. Because I don't think going into Israel, before the year in Israel, like, I don't think they had these such, you know, narrow-minded views of how the dating process would work. I'm just saying, I don't know where it came from. But someone, I think, you know, maybe rabbis, whatever, should say, you know, this is Lashon Hara. You know, this is, you know, if somebody has something that's going to impact someone's life, a person is has an illness or something, divulge that. But these kinds of crazy things, you know, the person went for a movie once, it may not be for you. You know, it just gets so ridiculous. And I think, you know, I'm just saying, like, to me, that's just, you know, how many shidduchim are broken because of, you know, people's life and power. That's one point. But, you know, that's pretty much the same thing. You know, and then that expectation thing that, you know, just, I'm just saying, maybe they do need some, you know, someone has to maybe take it to Israel and say, you know, they have to be taught in Israel or somewhere along the line what, you know, what to look for, how to date, if the date went pretty well, give somebody a second chance, you know, something like that. You know, just.
Thank you. Heidi?
I have 4 sons, so please don't come and attack me after this.
How old are they?
One is turning 22. And an example, and as a result of the fact that I have... As a result that I have 4 sons, and I'm very upset about the shidduch crisis, for lack of a better word, I do get involved in shidduchim as much as I can. I had a successful Mayanot shidduch, about to have a 1-year marriage anniversary. So a few points. Number one, I have told my oldest son, who went to a pretty right-wing yeshiva in Israel for 2 years, and is graduating college, surrounded by many married friends with children, I told him that he really can't buy into this, and that since he's going to put himself out into the dating world for the purpose of marriage, he can date a month before his first full-time permanent paycheck. And people tell me, I'd like to see you really implement that. And we just had this discussion recently, and I told him that this is where we stand, that it's not healthy to start your married life dependent on someone else paying your way.
Yes.
But I told him that he can't, because we're not doing, whether we can or can't, we're not buying into it. And, you know, people joke and say, oh, you're going to break down. I'm not breaking down. My husband is not breaking down. This is what we're going forward with. And he's going to be this poor, single 23-year-old only starting to date then. And he'll have to date the 19-year-old. I have another son in Israel this year, and he's also in a pretty right-wing yeshiva amongst the others. And his experience is different. He's had a girlfriend. They've gone on a hold during their year in Israel. And, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. But to comment on some of the other points, a lot of the girls that are more to the right are not going to go to these social mixers because they're going to get a big red X on their shidduch resume. So whether they want to go or not, they're not going to go, because if they've gone to certain schools in Israel, it's just not going to work for them to go to a social thing, even if it's a chesed project. So the reality is that you really have to define who you could put to these like social chesed projects and who it's not going to work for. When I do a shidduch, I always say you get 2 dates minimum because everyone's entitled to an off night. And my preference is that they don't call me at all after I arrange it.
that they're old enough to date for the purpose of marriage, they need to be able to either go forward with each other or agree together not to go forward. So perhaps people who might be involved in this, even on these very, and I deal with a lot of really frum people, I mean, a few dates, I've actually had to arrange the dates because they can't speak, but and they drop me after the third or fourth time. But if people who are arranging dates can just kind of like end the madness, so to speak, and say, I'm not going to be your go-between if you're old enough to get married and become intimate one day. You're old enough to be able to speak to each other and work it out.
Great advice. Yes, in the back. Rabbi Rubin, any thoughts on that? I think it's a broader question, actually. You know, if you feel strongly about going on Aliyah, do you, you know, not date women who are not going on Aliyah or don't plan to? But, well, Rabbi Rubin?
Well, I think Michael's answer is correct. You know, kids are allowed to have values, and their idealism is what inspires our world. And Aliyah is an ideal for the Jewish community in global terms, if maybe not in specific terms. So that is standalone. If I go out on a limb, I don't have a problem with a boy who says, I really want to live in Israel, and I don't know if I marry here, I won't go. I applaud that. And I think that's something that many of our religious Zionist schools here in the United States would also recognize as a value. As far as teaching with dogma in Israel, that's a different question. Any teaching with dogma is fraught with problems, similar to what I said before, is that it takes away kids' autonomy. Kids shouldn't be given a one-size-fits-all formula that they have to fit into, and then be feel guilty if they don't fit into it. Schools that say, if you don't go to YU or Touro, then you're going to lose everything that you've gained in Israel, and some schools don't even promote YU. If you don't go to Baltimore and go to Hopkins, then you've completely dismissed everything that you've learned from this yeshiva. Which means that the boy who leaves that school and goes to Maryland could kick everything he's learned in the last year because he's already been told he's worthless. So with all of their dogma and all of their brilliant insight, they've undermined themselves, what they've been teaching for the whole year. And shame on them. I resent that. And I feel the same way about Israel. In that sense, that you can't devalue a child if he's not successful in going to Israel. That said, the value system that we know of about Israel, and this is really not about this evening, this is just my own frustration now, I don't know too many yeshivot in Israel that still tell kids that if you don't go to Israel, you're going to lose your whole purpose as a Jew. Today, if you don't go to yeshiva, if you don't continue learning, is really the mantra, much more than Zionism. And that's for a different conversation when End the Madness 2 begins an organization. What happened to the yeshivot in Israel that used to promote love of Medina Israel and Eretz Israel? But that's not your question.
Well, my question basically is, firstly, I felt that her school did push it. I felt that her school pushed it to the detriment and she's at the point.
Or you're a girl.
It's a girl.
Oh, then that's true. There are more girls' schools than doing it than boys' schools.
I'll also say that, you know, successful marriage is generally you have to compromise. And I know that there are successful marriages I know of where a girl said, I would only live in Israel, and ended up dating a guy who didn't want to make Aliyah. And you know what? She changed her mind, you know, in terms of the relationship, because there was enough other things that she liked about the guy that, you know, made her think, well, you know, maybe that's not the be-all and end-all. Same thing, you know, reverse. A guy would swear, I'm never going to live in Israel. Started dating a girl who Aliyah was very, very important to her. And you know what? they're in Israel right now and very happily married. So, you know, it kind of works both ways, and I think that you have to be open-minded when you go into a relationship. And let me take some new questions. Yes. There you go.
I want to say, I have a friend in Englewood, and we should think about this, because I think this is a great idea. When she makes Sheva Bar Kokhba her kid or a friend's kid, it's only she makes them invite their friends, and each friend has to invite two other friends. So this way, the Sheva Bar Kokhba is really a single event, but it's under a different category of a single event. So
that's a terrific idea. Right.
So I think it's a fabulous idea it's wonderful.
I'd like to talk to you a little bit about afterwards. I think that can be expanded. Yes?
I want to give credit to Rabbi Brzezanski. On Sukkot, he had a college night at his house.
Right.
Unfortunately, I mean, I don't really know at this point how many Calcutta were on Tina. I'm sure there are a lot. Only 20 people went. I convinced my daughter that she had to go, and she took 10 of her friends and made them go. They were the only girls. And there were 10 boys. And she said it was a very lovely night because it wasn't just a shiur where Rabbi Brzezanski spoke, but he gave the opportunity, he put them in the position that they needed to talk to each other about the elections. And they just had a talk about election with a rabbi there. You know, I don't know who these boys were. You know, they don't walk you home anymore. You know, they're on the shiur, whatever. It's different. But at least he has something. But that means everybody who's here who, you know, even if it's not somebody from Tina for your daughter or for your son, but they get to know them and they might have friends and that spreads out. So it's important that within the community, if Rabbi Brzezanski holds something for the college, to get your kids to come to that kind of evening, because like somebody else said, even those things that are seductive kind of, you know, projects, past Yahav Shabbatones, they're all still separate. My daughter goes, they sit separate, they're still separate, and you would sit together because it's about the thing to do.
Okay.
And if, you know, within the community,
it's terrific, and we should do more of it. Yes?
What are high schools doing to help this problem, or what can they do to help?
It's a good question. Rookie?
I think there are some very nice programs that take place, meaning our girls do debate teams, they do college bowl teams. Not all things are co-ed. The Torah Bowl is not co-ed, for example. It's a, you know, girls' division. So there are some things. I think that there are always opportunity. You know, in our school we have a mechanechet program where there are weekly meetings with in small groups to discuss social issues, and with knowledgeable mechanchot that can encourage and facilitate those kinds of conversations, and we try to do our best. We stage panels sometimes about issues that we know are important to our students, and they get different kinds of perspectives from different kinds of teachers who are, you know, more to the right, teachers who are less to the right, teachers who are single, teachers who are married, teachers who are married for a long time, teachers who have kids who are in the, you know, scene. So we try to facilitate open conversations about as many things as possible.
Rabbi Rubin, I know it's a different mindset in a co-ed school, but any thoughts on that?
No, I think it's co-ed schools lend themselves to a more natural socialization process between boys and girls, and I don't think it's yet on their radar for the school culture. There are individuals, yes, but generally speaking, it's not on their radar that they're going to be polarized when they graduate from it.
Yes?
I feel like we're like beating around the bush. Because I think we know what the source of the problem is.
What's the source of the problem?
That the kids go to Israel and they're under the influence of these gurus, and we're all afraid to confront that issue. Getting married now is 21. So many people have mentioned to me how lucky I am because they met naturally at Camp Masorah 4 years ago, and I know I'm lucky. And even his girlfriend, fiance, who's at Stern, and we were shopping at Bed Bath & Beyond for his they register, and she said, you know, I can't even imagine doing this with somebody that I've known for 3 months. You know, you have to make all these like stupid decisions about what China. But that was her reaction, like, and she sees her friend struggling, but I guess I feel like when my son was in Israel, he already had this girlfriend, and his Rebbe, and I'm going to say who it is because I'm proud of what he said. This is the Rebbe of Torah Shag. He said, if you're going out with somebody, you've really met this person already, and you really feel that this is, you know, a person for you, you should keep going out with them. And his Rebbe at Torah Shag absolutely knew he was going out with his fiat, who he ultimately. But I think that's very unusual. And I have another son who's younger who is so right-wing now that, you know, he wouldn't even go to his sister's soccer game yesterday. She's 14. I mean, I couldn't believe it, but that, so he's going to Israel. I mean, I'll never see him again. Really, I feel so responsible. And this breaks my heart to think about, are we actually confronting the issue with him? Because they're the ones that are sending the signals to these kids that all this stuff is usher.
Well, I think both Rebbetzin Billet and Rabbi Rubin talked about the fact that there are things that can be done before your children get to Israel with good. Well, it's not a question of good or bad. It's a question of having an open line of communication with your kids and being able to teach them the values that are important to you, so that when they do go to Israel, I think that they're more likely to.
Also, you're the one with the checkbook. You're the one paying your child's tuition.
You know what? I applaud Heidi Fuchs, but you know what? I don't think that I'm committed to trying her approach. And we've already tried it, but I don't see it work in every case.
But he didn't go to Israel yet.
Doesn't matter.
5 minutes.
But so much of the problem, for many, I think my younger son is an exception. I think for many people, the problem seems to trigger in Israel. That's all I'm saying.
All right, I do have to wrap it up. I want to have two more questions, one over here and one over here. You start.
Okay, two quick points, okay? I understand your frustration. I understand that a certain rabbinate, a certain women, you know, who head seminaries, that you perceive as demagogue. But I have to say one thing. If you think back, okay, when I was in Yeshiva, we didn't go right after high school to Eretz Yisrael. We just waited till our junior year. That was our cult of going to Savon or to Europe. The reason why so many people, Nachanchem in America, were pushing the year in Israel is because when we sent our kids straight to college, a lot of them assimilated. A lot of them went off the derech. And maybe this is, you know, in some cases an overreaction swing the other way, but that was the reason, if you think back 10, 15, 20, 30, 25 years ago, why suddenly it was shifted from post-college or in college to right after high school. So a strength in giving me a soul, a chizuk, that they shouldn't go off the derech, for assimilation of certain colleges and universities, 90%, and it still is. Okay, the second thing I have to say is, I get a lot of people who call me up, and kids come back from Eretz Yisrael. I don't know why they always call my husband and me. We're not psychologists, we're not rabbanim, we're not mechanchim. They end up on our door, they end up on our living room, they send their kids for Shabbos and Yantif. Start, the most important thing you have and is precious is Shabbos. Don't go run through Shabbos lunch Friday night or Shabbos lunch. Have time to communicate with your kids. They won't reject you as much. You have no idea how one boy who went through the yeshiva system here in Bergen County came back and he was so delighted. His father, who went to YU and decided after YU he wasn't wearing tzitzis anymore, put on tzitzis again. You have to connect, and not everything our kids are going to do and we're going to like, but for example, Shabbos, spend the time. Don't rush through Shabbos. Don't change into jogging suits here in Bergen County right after, whatever you call it, Shabbos meals or right after shul. Do that. Meet halfway, and you're not going to lose them because you have to start working on the next generation, your grandchildren, when your kids are still in high school.
Thank you. Yes.
Okay. I'm sure it's something to stand up. Just to introduce myself briefly, I'm 21 years old. I went to Israel. I came back. While I was there, I was convinced. I called up my mother in October. Hi, I'm not coming back. Do you want to sign a check for a Bar Ilan tuition? And I was like, no, actually, you're coming back before Hanukkah. So we discussed it. I was able to stay until March, and here I am. Okay, until June, until the end of the year, whatever it was. I'm in college now, March is the end of the year. And
And the year after I came back from Israel, I started getting approximately 9 invitations every 6 months for weddings. And one of the things, and now I'm a psychology major, and like you said, your parents know best. My mother convinced me to go to a secular university instead of to Stern, and there was a lot of benefits that I'll explain, and this is a comment. I mean, I'm a psychology major, so I mean, I don't even have a degree yet. I'm not going to profess to be an expert. But just from observations that I've made of me and my friends, no matter whether you go into Israel thinking that you don't want to change, thinking that you're going to change, being unsure either way, there's just a general, I guess, stigma that the year in Israel is a year devoted to your personal growth and change and becoming more religious or whatever, just becoming the best person you can be. And I mean, I came back feeling like I missed out because I didn't feel like I grew as much as I could have. And I feel like a lot of my friends come back assuming, like a lot of people come back assuming that they had the year of growth, they must have grown, and because they grew, they are now ready to get married, whether or not they actually are, which is one of the reasons why, like I said, I thank my parents for sending me to secular university, because that gave me 2 years of like not being in that environment to like reconsider and analyze how much did I actually grow, how much did I actually not grow, am I actually ready to get married? And I feel like there's a tremendous pressure when like you get back and you're assumed that you have grown and that you're now ready to get married, and then like your first Shabbos at Stern, when there's the 10 guys who show up from IU and you're not engaged to one of them by Hanukkah, like it stresses my friends out, and like it does like a lot of pressure because you're assumed to have become a better person and marriageable material, whether or not you actually are, and people just tend to jump into it assuming they're ready. And I guess that's more of an observation than a question.
Okay, thank you very much. I'd like to thank our panelists, Rabbi Rubin and Rabbi Sinbelli. Thank you all for coming. I'll be hanging around for a while if you'd like to speak to me about In the Madness. There is a sign-up sheet which will allow you to put your name and email address and receive information about our organization. Thanks again.
Thank you.
A lot of interest. Yes. It's not going to solve it here, for
right.
sure.
Right.
But we're talking about it, which is good.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I was a freshie when you were in all the classes.
No, I know.
Married, yeah.